trip back to Victoria for all those in navy blue.
But with Matty Ryan's outstretched arm on a couple of occasions and a swing of Matthew Lecky's right boot, hamstring repaired, thankfully, Australia are off to the quarterfinals, which is pretty relieving for all of us. And that includes myself, Daniel Garb, Andy Harper and Brenton Speedy called the game and are with me here in the lobby of the Ayla Grand Hotel in Al-Ayn, about 10 minutes away from where the Socceroos have edged past. Who'd we play tonight? Again, boys, it's been a long one, that's for sure. Uzbekistan. We're watching UAE Kyrgyzstan, so it's thrown me a bit.
Did we get a free feed for the hotel?
Boys, good to see you. That was a long night, but a relieving one in the end, I dare say.
Well, I guess it was, yeah, it's still alive in the tournament, but not going to win the competition on that form. Really poor first half. Corrected for the second half. And then didn't really show a lot of adventure in extra time. I was like, I don't know, were we happy to play for penalties against Uzbekistan? Team that's never beaten us? I don't know. I was pretty underwhelmed by it, to be honest. The recovery into the second half was a step forward after the first, which was appalling in my opinion. And then we just waited for penalties. That's what it looked like to me. So, yes, relieved to go through, but, geez, a lot of work to do.
They got some early wake-up calls, didn't they? The ball over the top was exposing Australia big time. Sainsbury burnt off a few times by Shomuradov, who then had an opportunity one-on-one with Matty Ryan very early on, and Sainsbury just showed him the narrow side and said, do your best there because I've got Matt Ryan behind him. And lucky it is a goalkeeper of the quality of Matt Ryan, because he made a sensational save there to deny Shomuradov his fifth goal of the tournament. Then Australia seemed to sort that out because the ball over the top wasn't on anymore. I'm not sure how they did that, as the UAE don't quite go 3-1 up. We're going live here from the foyer of the hotel, watching it on my mobile phone. The Australia's next opponent being decided. They're 2-1 up at the moment, if you want to get some perspective on when we recorded this podcast. But, yeah, Australia adjusted well, and there were pretty much no more chances for Uzbekistan until about the 87th minute, when suddenly a cross came in, a dangerous one, and Akhmadov swung a right boot at it, where if he left it for his teammate, maybe Hamdamov would have been able to score on his left boot, as Andy Harper pointed out so brilliantly in commentary. But Australia's chances were few and far between. And again, I don't want to feel like I'm picking on Jamie McLaren, but Apostolos Yanou seems to add a lot more in terms of linking up with teammates and making things happen than McLaren does, who keeps on getting the start. I wonder for how long.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We'll get to what potential changes Graham Arnold might make after we've, you know, done the post-mortem on this one. I'm with you. I thought Australia's first half was poor. It reminded me of Jordan, the lethargy in terms of our intensity. Like, it just wasn't there. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it was the empty stand, no atmosphere. They couldn't generate their own energy, which is surprising. Maybe the long break they've had, what, 6 days just about, maybe they struggled to get out of first gear. I don't know. But the passing was sloppy as well. Some of the touches, I think Economides and Mabil showed that they're young, developing players, and they're going to have ups and downs, because I didn't think they were at the races in the first half. And I agree with you on McLaren. For mine, it was Tom Rogic who created for Australia, and Tom Rogic only. I don't think he had anyone else that was joining him in terms of a creative force. So he continues to deliver, which is a good story, although he's missing from the quarterfinal. But
although he's missing, that's a big story. He's out. So our most creative player is...
Yeah, it is. No, it's a massive one. But we'll talk, as I said, we'll talk about what Graham Arnold does from here. But it's a huge blow, because there was no one else driving Australia on in terms of creativity. And in that first half, especially in the second half, they all came together a bit better. But, you know, again, the cutting edge wasn't there. They weren't getting in behind. They were controlling the game. But Uzbekistan seemed pretty settled. So he's got to change things up. But let's get on to how Australia won at the penalty shootout. And again, Harps, we waxed lyrical about Matthew Ryan after the Palestine win. And his legend continues to grow in Australian football, doesn't it?
Well, as it must. Isn't just so impressive. Two great saves. The second key save was just amazing, really. But, you know, that's where Matt Ryan is at the moment. And he's just so focused, so fit. Things are going for him. Not only are things going for them, but he's created the environment where things are going to go for him, because he's just the complete package and thoroughly impressive. And the response of the teammates to him and to Matt Lecky as well. I concur with your words on him. But, you know, stoked for the players that they're still through and everyone, because you get a chance to improve, and they're going to have to. I don't know if the next opponent's going to be the massive test, because UAE have been scratchy, and Kyrgyzstan, if they threaten Australia, should they get that far, that'll be a disaster, really, because they shouldn't just be at that level. But anyway, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. Just on today, the penalties were all very good, apart from Aziz, unfortunately, had his saved. But quality penalties. And that bizarre scenario when Robbie Cruz steps up to take his penalty, places the ball, referee interferes once, so Robbie resets the ball, and then the referee interferes again and says, do something with the ball, when Robbie's trying to concentrate, and Robbie said, the ball's fine, and the ref just let it go. Like, what was going on with that bloke? It was a bizarre interlude in a strange, strange night. So lethargic, the team, the touches. And Tom Rogic, I agree, was the catalyst to get things going, and he provided most things, but he wasn't great in the first half either. The contagion was widespread. Good players in bad touch, and that's what they've got to get to the bottom of.
Super save by Matty Ryan as well. He stood his ground because Australia had fallen behind effectively in the shootout because Bajic missed first with Australia's second penalty. I just think credit to any player who puts their hand up to take a shot in the first five, but Bajic as one of the first couple was a strange choice for mine. Yeah. I think he's pretty limited in the way that he can hit the ball. I mean, he's a lefty who always goes backwards in that left-back role, and the goalkeeper read him pretty easily. Nesterov made the save, and it was nowhere near the bottom corner. So Australia then turned to Matty Ryan, and he held his ground. That's how he saved the second penalty from Uzbekistan. He stood up long enough and he said, you might be going down the middle, and sure enough he was. And then you've got to be so strong because he can be taken into the back of the net with the ball. The players can hit it that hard. So he kept that one out, and as Harp said, the second save down low to his right probably reminds me of the Wayne Rooney penalty, which I think from memory was the same direction and with a similar kind of save when he denied Rooney in the Premier League. So imagine the confidence he's got out of saving from Wayne Rooney in the Premier League, saving from Charlie Adam, another good penalty taker in the Premier League, and now doing it for Australia, saving his first penalty ever.
And he's on track to overtake Zeljko Kalajic as Australia's second most capped goalkeeper of all time. And he joined him, so he's going to go past him in the next game. I mean, you know, the guy's, what, he's mid-20s? What's he at, 27 or something? I mean, he could catch Schwartzy, and he could join him as a legend of Australian football in that position. He's just fantastic. And it was great watching the goalkeepers' union. Danny Vukovic, what a teammate. I mean, he was giving the signals to Matty Ryan on where they might go. They had the book out where their penalties have been, and Danny Vukovic, he turned his back to Matt Ryan and gave the signals. And I was thinking, are they worried that this is illegal? Because I couldn't work out why he was turning. And they said the reason is if he stands, then Matty Ryan might get thrown by which side he's going. So he has to turn around so that Matty Ryan reads. Correct. It's got to be right or left. Yeah, it was fantastic. A couple of times he gave the, I don't know, signal, which means the guy can shoot it anywhere. We don't have a great reading on him, but that was great to see. And then afterwards, I don't know if you saw this.
That sort of interference would be enough for Serena Williams to blow up, wouldn't it?
It was great watching as well in the celebration. Matty Lecky ran to one side. Danny Vukovic went straight past him in a million miles an hour, straight to Matty Ryan. So the goalkeepers' union in full effect. But just on the shootout, I was so happy for Robbie Cruz. I mean, we spoke about it last time, the crap this guy cops, you know, the ridicule to stand up. It's only a penalty. It's not a goal in regular time, but it's a big penalty, and it just silences people for a little bit, you know? And this bloke had the courage to stand up and stick it away.
And the referee ganged up on him, as Harp's described. I mean, he's trying to maintain his poise, and the referee says, put the ball back on the spot. He says, it is on the spot. Do you not know the laws, you muppet? That's the thing that frustrates me, referees who don't know the laws, clearly. Because the ball just has to hover over the spot somewhere, and it was. But because it was a little more advanced than some others who put it back on the spot, I mean, give me a spell. 31-year-old referee with a lot to learn, the man from Qatar. Unlike me, to have a little spray at the ref. But Cruz then steps up after establishing what was the all clear with the referee. Half a second later, he flicked the switch and said, top corner, thank you very much. Good luck saving that one. So credit to him.
Well, you might as well continue the rants at the referee, because I don't think Tom Rogic deserved a yellow card. I mean, he clearly was going for the ball, and it just happened to, his foot happened to land on. Now, if it's a foul, fine, but it's not a yellow card. I mean, do me a favour. And now he misses the quarterfinal.
Well, I think in commentary, Harps actually agreed with the decision. On real time, I thought Rogic has clearly passed the ball to a teammate and then inadvertent contact. Yeah. Should he be taking any care of the other opponent? Then you watch the replay and Rogic does go with a bit of a stamping kind of motion, which he infamously did in the A-League in his final ever game. But I think he left a little bit in there and I think the referees have made a good read on it. I don't know what you think, Harps.
Well, that's how I read it. I thought his foot was a little bit prone. And probably just anticipating, as you do as a footballer, just that it's that protection mechanism. It's not to take someone out. But my point in commentary was, if that's how the officials have seen it, then they have to give a card. Whether they're right or wrong, and you can speed it up, slow it down on replay, they don't have that view. But if, in live action, he's thought that foot is cocked, they're obliged to give a card. And it's on that basis that I said I don't think they had much choice, if that's what they thought they saw.
Well, I disagreed with it, but he's out anyway. So now Graham Arnold's got some big choices to make. I think the Rogic one is pretty straightforward. I think Luongo will come in and Irvine will move further forward into number 10. I think that'll be the way he'll do it.
Really?
He's already talked up Irvine playing in the number 10 role. So for me, that seems straightforward. But then I think he's got more changes to make. I agree on McLaren. I don't think he's given enough yet. And Gianno's looking really good. Surprisingly so, from my point of view. Not that I thought he had nothing to offer, but his all-round game is better than I thought it would be. I thought maybe he could give a bit in the air and poach a goal, but his touches look really good. Controlling some difficult balls at times on his chest, bringing it down, bringing others into play. I think he's got to make a change there because Jamie's not giving enough. And I think you've got to start Lecky. If he's fine, if he's recovered after playing more than they expected him to or wanted him to, then I think he's got to come in from the start for one of Economides or Mabil, whoever can give him more time when you consider that Lecky probably won't be able to get through the full 90 of a game in a few days' time. So I'd be looking at three changes.
Well, I would be looking at not playing Irvine in the Rogic role. I would be looking at playing Mabil in that role. He's got an eye for goal. I mean, he scored in the last two consecutive games. For some reason, he came off early tonight when we thought he might have stayed on there. Economides was having a poorer game than Mabil. So I would switch Mabil to the 10 role. I bring Lecky on the right flank, McLaren out, Yanu in, and I leave Irvine where he is because he's a handy weapon. He originally brought in to defend the long ball against a taller striker. Mind you, the UAE have a different setup, but I still think Irvine ahead of Luongo, and I wouldn't be going that way that you suggest Arnie is going to go. And if Arnie listens to the podcast, I'd implore him to maybe think about using Mabil as the number 10 ahead of Irvine.
You're the deciding vote, because Arnie's listening, so he wants advice.
We know that's for a fact. He says he doesn't listen to or read anything, so we know that's not going to happen. The question was, now what's going to happen? What would I do? Well, it's not what I do. Let's talk about all the different things that might happen. I suspect it'll be Luongo in, Irvine up. That's what I suspect. I'm pretty interested in Speedy's view on this one, though. It wouldn't be my inclination to put a Weir Mabil in there, but it's an interesting point. The other player, and people will start throwing stuff at their whatever device, but the other player who's played number 10 on more than one occasion for Australia's Robbie Kroos. Now, Arnie has not abandoned Kroos. Yes. He's used him in every game. His reasons for that are his own. I think we're all in agreement that, you know, Robbie's contribution had started to drop, and then when Economides and Mabil had sort of burst through, then it was his time to step back. Yet, when he goes to his bench, Robbie's the first one off or the second one off. And don't be surprised, as we're talking about this, that Robbie gets that job because he can do that job, right? And he's done it before. I don't think, in the end, I think he'll just find a reason to bring Masluongo in and just strengthens the whole thing up physically, experience-wise. I think that's what'll happen. But the unavoidable change has to be Apo Yanu in. He's been saying it now for... He's got to play.
Yeah.
He has made a difference every time he's come off the bench. And it's not Jamie's lack of goals, because it's not Yanu's abundance of goals. It's the general threat he poses.
Yeah.
It's the piece that he's providing other players that Jamie hasn't been able to provide yet, might still come. Is Awimu Billy injured? What was the reason for him coming off before Jamie McLaren?
I think it was just his choice, tactical. Yeah.
Well, that surprised me, not only because I'd continue to persevere with Awimu Billy because he took the... He followed the lead in the second half. He started squaring up defenders and going past them and doing what he's done so well. So I'd be persevering with him. But, you know, we're all expecting Matthew Lecky to come on and be the centre forward, because that's been all the insinuation since the World Cup, actually. And so when the number came up, I thought we're all expecting Jamie to come off for Matthew, when it was a weir for Matthew, which was interesting. And I prefer Lecky playing wide anyway. I know what Graham Arnold... I can see what he sees about him playing a centre forward. But to me, there is a candidate there now, right? It's Yanou. Now, when he was playing his club football in China, he was not mounting a case for selection. So much so that even the bloke who worked hard to bring him into the national team setup, Ange Postecoglou, cut him adrift. It's not going to cut it. He's maybe realised that now. Because playing back in Cyprus, he looks a footballer. Mate, he looks a footballer. And there are goals in him. And I don't know what the hesitation is.
And McLaren had that little snapshot when Lecky came on. Lecky made something happen. The ball broke for Rogic. He went first time, deliberate, hard and low across the face of goal. Set up for McLaren, and he couldn't get on the end of it. If McLaren puts that goal in, you think, wow, here we go. He's going to poach some goals for us, but he didn't, and the chance may be gone. It's time for Yanou.
I agree. Consensus on that one. Yanou in for McLaren. Is it Yanou or Gianni? Because there's been a lot of conjecture about this.
We know who we're talking about. Can we not play with the names? I mean, do we have
well,
to be...
Well, he says Yanou in commentary, and everyone says Gianni when they report.
Okay, well, I'm following...
Because we're doing it's an international feed, right? We're putting on the international language here.
Gianni's
fine. You're the reporter on the ground, so yeah. Can you get him to speak into the same microphone and tell us his name?
I've said Gianni a number of times. He's never corrected me, so I'm sticking...
I don't think he'd mind.
I'm sticking with that. Look, we all agree that he should be stuck in the team. That's most important. He won't care what he's being called as long as he's read out in that 11, and he probably deserves it right now. But, yeah, without Rogic, it's going to be tough, I think, for them to come up with the creativity. Lecky coming back in helps. How much time he's got in his legs next game will be a factor. But
is he going to be ready to start?
Yeah, maybe not.
He's already played more tonight than was expected. Yeah. And so, you know, obviously got through it unscathed. Like, it didn't re-injure, but how much stress did he put on that injury?
So relatively short backup compared to what they've just been through.
With the extra time that no one needed. And really...
I'd like to see him throw him in. I was surprised at how much of a difference he made, considering the football he's missed, tournament of this nature, the way Uzbekistan were growing in confidence defensively. He came in and he made a real impact. I mean, you could see why we lamented his loss.
Yeah, because he was running past players. And what did Owim Abil do when he got his chance? He was running past players. And what did Chris Economides do when he got his chance? He was running past players. Those guys didn't do that in the first half, not entirely their fault, because the whole team was asleep. But if you don't have someone, and this is how Tommy changed things, he started running. It's not rocket science, for Pete's sake. Get the ball, beat your opponent. If you do that across the field, either by passing or running, more often than not, guess what? You get a positive outcome. But if you're just prepared to pass your way until your opponents fall asleep, you're not going to make a lot of headway.
How easy is it to do? I mean, that'll be spoken about ad nauseum, what you're saying, that Australia couldn't break down this Uzbekistan defence. They were playing a back six down the stretch there. How do you break that team down? Is it as simple as what you're saying there, or is it very difficult unless you've got a Lionel Messi or an Iniesta probing? Do we have the players that can break down a back six?
In the absence of Azani, Moy, Boyle, Lecky just coming back?
We do that because you have to. Firstly, you've got to try and get the ball into an offensive situation before the six are set, right? Now, it wasn't as though Uzbekistan were camped on the edge of their penalty area and didn't move from there. They were, you know, they would push out and play in transition. So in that transition moment, how quickly are you trying to get the ball forward? Point one. If it's not a transition moment, when you're passing through the angles, 2-2.
Kyrgyzstan have just equalised.
We'll have to go the extra distance as well. That's 2-2 in stoppage time.
What a great story, Kyrgyzstan. That little nation have equalised against the rich Emiratis, the host. That is fantastic to see.
So the next part of that is, and there's not enough of this going on at the moment with this mindset. There's a lot of touch back, pass back. There's not a lot of touch forward and play, and those crucial seconds are the difference between having a gap through which to pass or run and not. right? And this all adds up. But finally, once that, and this is to Speedy's point, because Australia versus Uzbekistan, it's not the first time a team's tried to break down a pack defence. It happens to the best teams when there's disparity. And what breaks the surface tension? A moment of magic, a combination, or a player who's got the cojones to take someone on around the box. We started to find that. We didn't quite have the finishing touch at the end of it. But, you're 9 lengths behind at the turn if you're not even trying to beat your opponent. If you just pass, trying to get through the minefield, it's not going to happen. Someone has to take the responsibility, like Tommy Rogic did, like Awima Bill can do, like Matthew Leckie did, to actually break the line. And that's a matter of just giving players that responsibility. And I thought, if I'm going to use a word to describe our performance in possession, I thought overall we were really submissive in possession, a really submissive body language possession style from us today, and wouldn't have scared anyone.
Just on that, I agree with you, but having watched training, sometimes the passes back, and I'm sure you know this in football, but they have a lot of set plays, and a lot of the set plays actually start at the back. Sure. Some of the passes sideways are actually, having watched it and then spoken to Graham Arnold about it afterwards, to draw the press so that you draw a man out and then you go down that side. So a lot of people get frustrated. Why is Degenek passing backwards there? He's got space in front of him. What he's trying to do is draw the press out and then they go the other side so they can open things up. I'm not saying they're doing it well enough, but sometimes there is actually method to that style of play.
Yeah, there is. But how often is the pass that might spark move after they've done that hard work from side to side behind the player, not to the right boot that allows them to face forward? How often was a pass behind Ryan Grant, who you're trying to go to propel you down a flank? And then Bajic, I've been on about this for 6 months since the World Cup, his modus operandi is to go backwards because he doesn't open up his body shape to face forward enough. And then actually today, when he was potentially about to go forward, Economides was passing it straight out of play. Maybe because Bajic's tendency is to be on the back foot, ready to go back and defend, instead of being on the front foot, where Economides is thinking he's going.
He worked his backside off, though, as is Bajic today. I agree with you, but he actually put in a shift and a half.
Massive. I mean, you know what you're getting with Aziz. I've no complaints at all about his output. I think in those matches, and I said it before the tournament, to me, Gersbach's a better option. Yeah. When you need a bit of craft around the penalty area to break down a pack defence, Gersbach's, you know, he's got that ease on the eye about him, as one way of putting it. But you never hear me criticise what Aziz Bajic gives for the cause. Incredible output. So too today, Jackson Irvine, whose general game, compared to his normal high standards, his technique today was all over the place. He couldn't hit a cow's ass with a banjo today.
But that's my point. So you guys are endorsing Luongo, Milligan, Irvine as being your three midfielders, with Irvine in the, Irvine in the 10 role. Off the back of that control today that he displayed and passing ability, we're going to be lamenting in 72 hours or whatever it is the fact that we had no creativity in midfield.
Yeah, I think
I love it when you put words in my mouth. Because if you want to rewind this, you'll say, it's what will Graham do? I think he'll just find Luongo a space in there. Maybe he'll play 10.
What would you play? Well, that's what we're asking the podcast. We're not asking what you think, Graham Arnold. Well, we are as well.
That wasn't how the question was framed. Let me think about that. I'll get back to you.
Okay. I think Irvine, you're not going to provide the silk of Tom Rogic or maybe Mustafa Rahmani, but his effectiveness can create goals. He shows that in the championship, and he has done for a couple of years. I think he's done a good job in the central midfield, especially with his height on set pieces, but I think playing forward around the area, he can conjure up goals, and I think that'd be quite handy. He got frustrated, though, tonight. I don't know if you saw at one stage.
Yeah, we did.
he copped one. Uzbekistan were calling for a free kick, and he turned to Hector Cooper and gave him an almighty spray. Yeah. And after a week of going through his love for music and how he's across all genres, that was the heavy metal side of Jackson Irvine coming to the fore.
But that was, I said this to Speedy during the call, that was completely indicative of where he was at in the game. It was just not going right for him, and so he was about to punch anything. But he didn't stop trying. I mean, still deep into the 120th minute, he was hairing around after the ball. I mean, I don't know where people find that energy level. So I was mightily impressed with that. And I have thought about it now quickly about who do I play as number 10. And I think I'd probably go with Irvine, and I'll tell you why. Not because I'm going to frame him as a number 10. I'm going to frame him as an 8 getting forward into the box. Because who is Australia going to play? They're going to play either Kyrgyzstan, and we won't know this by the end of the podcast because it'll go into extra time. They're going to play Kyrgyzstan, where he would be a massive handful in the penalty area with balls coming in. Or they play the UAE, who are going to actually... They're not going to sit back against Australia playing at home. They will actually try and play. I don't think they'll be good enough, which will give the space for Irvine to run into in behind. So I think it's... You know, my other philosophy on this, Speedy, is I don't... On teams that are getting a bit of momentum, I don't like making too many changes. And that's why the one I'm adamant about is to get Apostolos in there. And then the other three guys work pretty well in midfield. And I'm very happy with Mabil and Economides. And to be honest with you, without knowing the status of Matthew Leckie, and I completely trust the medical stuff, my inclination would be just to pull the reins back on him again. Build him up, strengthen him up, and don't expect 90 minutes out of him. Bring him on to win the game as we need, and then you get ready for the big guys if we get through that far.
And how's Luongo coping? You're around the camp more than us. Yeah. If he comes back into the starting 11 after being on the outer again, just like he was at the World Cup when he didn't get a minute, how's he sort of reacting?
Yeah,
he's actually set to speak to the media, I'm told, this week, which will be interesting because he hasn't done much speaking at all since the World Cup because he's been wary, we understand, of unloading on basically what happened in Russia, where he was left out. And yeah, he was. So I think he knows he could let go, and he's trying to bite his tongue. But I think he will speak in the next couple of days. Maybe he'll be more composed about it. I'm not sure. But yeah, the Socceroos, they want to get the best out of Master Wongo. They feel as though he needs to contribute somewhere, the discussions I've had, at some stage of the tournament for Australia to have a run. Maybe that's the next game now. Master, you're back in. Tommy's out. Whether he plays further up or not, I think he's got to give Australia something because, yeah, obviously he hasn't done so enough in this tournament, which is why he's been on the bench for a couple of games.
And you know, we're sort of, I know, become... We've pigeonholed Mas Luongo as a defensive midfielder. Maybe that's because where he does most of his stuff with QPR. But when he first came in to the national team, he was playing up the park. And he looked like he might have been a solution just off the strikers in that sort of midfield role. And from that sort of position, he scored the opening goal in the cup final 4 years ago, the Asia Cup final. So, you know, maybe Arnie just gives him less defensive responsibility in a structure sense and says, you go and play that position. I'd be comfortable with that. I think he's a tremendous player, and that's one of the great crimes against Australian football, that Bert van Marwijk just froze him out like that. Utterly ridiculous. And talk about cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Well, we're sitting here, boys. We could be set for another penalty shootout between UAE and Kyrgyzstan. It is podcasting live. Regardless of what happens in this game, does Australia get through to the semi-final against probably South Korea, Speedy?
I think so. I think they can take care of either one of these teams, even though there will be no Tom Rogic. And I'm with Harps. I think Leckie kept in reserve to come on for the last half hour if required. Otherwise, keep him cherry ripe if Australia can do the business and get a 2 or 3 goal lead going and keep him ready for the semi against Korea Republic, who've got their own issues right now. We're calling their game tomorrow against Bahrain. Ki Sung Jung's gone home.
Dave, his name is actually. He grew up in Brisbane. Yeah. He goes by the name of Dave if you're talking to Australians. Dave was his actual name.
Oh,
yeah.
Ali Mabkut has missed a sitter by the looks here for the UAE. But Korea, there's some talk. They haven't had a full-time doctor since 2002 when guess who was in charge? Gus Hiddink. And now it's costing them. There have been 2 misdiagnoses in this tournament, including Ki Sung Jung, who's now out with a hamstring after they originally diagnosed him. Oh, he got a bit of a thigh problem. So Newcastle are filthy because he got called into camp earlier than they wanted to release him. They've also lost the key midfielder. So who knows? Maybe Bahrain, who we've been a fan of, Harps, because we think their Czech coach Miroslav Sukup has done things against the odds, and they could cause an upset.
Yeah, they could, but they won't. South Korea are too strong. And Australia will want to sort themselves out by semi-final time. I think they'll get there. I can't see Kyrgyzstan stopping them. I can't see UAE and their current guys stopping them. They're still going to have to do better than today, but they're capable of that. But the semi-final, which is a minimum requirement for me coming into this tournament, minimum was a semi-final, and I think they now can get there. But that's when all bets are off, mate. They'll get found out. They'll get tested massively against South Korea, irrespective of the quality they're missing at the moment, because they are just such a strong team.
Agree with you both on that. I think we'll get through. I would throw Matthew Leckie in, even if you can only play an hour. Just throw him in and try and get on top of the game early, because the energy of the bloke, the engines on the bloke, the intensity, we need that. So I'd do that. Gianu in as well. And, yeah, I'd put Luongo in for the suspended Rogic. And move Irvine up to 10. So three changes in the attacking third, I think, are needed. We might see as many as that. Boys, thanks so much. Welcome to the hotel. The beds are nice, I can attest. I've been here for about a week. Enjoy.
How have you survived, Garby? We're in Abu Dhabi, which is the host country for the Asian Cup. There's not a television in the joint that's showing the game. So what is going on here?
There's an Irish bar.
You might have sorted this out for us.
Yeah, I mean, mate, I wish I could. I wish I had that clout, but unfortunately I don't. There's an Irish bar about 5 minutes away where we've gone to watch the Premier League, which has been very enjoyable. But I can't help you on the Asian Cup in the city that's hosting it. It is a bit of a joke.
That's bizarro world, mate. Yeah. It's bizarro world.
Anyway, maybe at the end of the tournament, we'll get onto some matters with the AFC and try sort them out. We've spent this podcast trying to sort Australia's problems out. Hopefully, they are solved by the time we get to the quarterfinals, and then we can move past either the UAE or Kyrgyzstan. Thank you for listening. We're going to settle in for the penalty shootout of this game. By the time you're listening to it, you'd know who won. Thanks so much for joining us on the Fox Football Podcast.